What are some of the things that people should be thinking about if you're in the food sector and want to get into that level?
So two pieces that are misunderstood. The first is the commercial reality of it. The second thing I would mention is not enough work goes into really providing yourself with the assurance that your product is going to resonate with consumers.
Welcome to the More Clients, Less Effort podcast, where we provide expert insights and strategies to turbocharge your business growth. I'm your host, Tim Hyde, and in this series, we'll unpack the secrets, proven systems, and the sales and marketing strategies used by successful business owners to attract, convert, and keep A-class clients on autopilot. Whether you're a seasoned entrepreneur looking to scale your customer acquisition or a budding startup owner looking to crack the code on attracting the right clients, you've come to the right place. Join us on this journey to building a thriving business that leaves a lasting impact. Now let's get started.
Hey guys, welcome to another episode of More Clients, Less Effort. Today we're going to take a departure from our normal marketing and dive into the food industry with my guest, David Burns. David's the founder of DJB Food Group and Cream Design, helping manufacturers, brands, and entrepreneurs develop, distribute, and market new products and brands into retail. David's been operating his own business for 8 years, but has an absolute lifetime of experience in the food sector. Some of David's recent success stories include Remedy Kombucha, which I love, and No Nuff and Dips and Karma Bites, Popped Lotus Seeds, to name just a few. In 2024, David's clients collectively achieved in excess of $60 million in AUD from product sales and brands developed over the last 24 months. David, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks very much for that intro. Sounds pretty good to me.
You spent your entire career in the food sector, starting as a chef. What was it about that you felt that there was something missing that you need to sort of step into it space, or was it just a natural progression?
It's an interesting story. I mean, I didn't like school. And I, to be perfectly honest with you, when I left school, I wanted to do anything that, you know, didn't involve anything that I did at school. It sounds terrible, but so I ended up, you know, I loved food, loved cooking. My dad had a huge veggie patch, a veggie garden at home on the south coast of England there. So I got exposed to, you know, harvesting and cooking and eating all the produce every summer. And I was a mad fisherman as well, so I used to catch prawns and sell it to a local fishmonger. So I was sort of introduced in that regard. But then, yeah, I just always fancied the hospitality industry. So did a diploma of catering in Eastbourne and the south coast of England and sort of ended up in the hot smoking kitchens of London and Europe. And the other part is I wanted to travel. And, you know, that industry is fabulous if you want to travel at the same time. So I had a career and travel at the same time. Yeah.
It's a pretty portable skill set. You just rock up to a restaurant and say, do you have any chefs available? Do you need someone to clean dishes or cook something, peel potatoes?
Yeah, definitely. It was fabulous. I remember I told this story a few times, but oh my God, in the late 80s, I remember traveling on an airplane with my knives in a roll. You know, you have your knives in the roll in the overhead locker.
can't get away with that anymore, can you?
True story.
Actually, I do recall just after 9/11 in the US, my parents were traveling around. And my mother got picked up for a little sewing kit. And inside said sewing kit was a pair of scissors, right? But literally, the pair of scissors were no longer than the last knuckle on your thumb. Literally, and the blade would have been about the length of your thumbnail, even without acrylics for the girls, right? So there was things that extreme to think, you know, no, they're scissors, they're out.
It's hilarious.
Yeah.
But anyway, all for the right reasons now, these days.
Talk to me about the transition to corporate career. You're doing chefing, get picked up by Coles.
I was. So it was in the mid-90s and Coles were looking in earnest to develop the sort of beginning of the ready meals era. So I, with the food industry background, joined Coles in that product development arena with suppliers helping develop the ready meals era. So we're literally talking 95, you know, almost 30 years ago now, so it's staggering. And that was part of the buying team. So I very quickly morphed into buying team. I was a buyer in the delicatessen. And then my last 3 years, I looked after the in-store bakery business. So buying all the flour, helping develop all the new bread and cake recipes for...
Okay, so that's really, really about sort of going out to market or receiving pitches and then assessing sort of commercial viability of the products that are presented to you.
Yeah, generally buying is, but... My portfolio with the bakery was where it was looking after the business with more baking in store.
Yep.
sourcing flour and premixes and raw ingredients and then developing recipes for our baking teams in stores. It's all changed now. It's a lot more par-baked product, not baking from scratch so much. But yeah, it's fabulous, fabulous experience. And obviously, I was using my food industry experience and learning the ropes of sort of merchandise and buying and marketing it, you know, with a best practice retailer like Coles Supermarket. So that was almost 10 years. It was, you know, a fabulous trajectory of personal and professional development. And nothing bad to say about that place at all.
Yeah. Well, now, what I know about the supermarket sector, right, because I've got some friends with IGA and Metcash who own supermarkets. I think there are a lot of people in the food industry, you know, cottage food industry, making small products, but the really big ticket growth for them comes in supplying to a major retailer like a Coles or a Metcash or a Woolworths in terms of growth, or, you know, Tesco's or whoever else it might be in other parts of the world. What are some of the mistakes that people make when presenting to a major wholesaler or a retailer like them? And what are some of the things that people should be thinking about if you're in the food sector and want to get into that level?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think the piece that's two pieces that are misunderstood. The first is the commercial reality of it. So really understanding your numbers and, you know, what the costs associated with not necessarily specifically trading with a major supermarket, but, you know, the very expensive, almost hidden cost part is in Australia, especially with our geography, is the moving product around, storing product, getting it picked and packed and shipping up these enormous freeways that we have from one state to another is very, very costly. So really understanding the micro detail of the commercials so you can make sure that whatever you're doing it at some point is going to be commercially viable. I think the second thing I would mention is, you know, really not enough work or thought or consumer research goes into really providing yourself with the assurance that your product and your brand is A, differentiated adequately, but also is going to resonate with consumers. And before you get to consumers, you've got to talk to, you know, the buyers and the category managers. So really, really get that assurance before you spend a lot of money. It's a big error that's made, but a big tick in the box if you do that piece well. Yeah.
Yeah. You can't be cooking out of your kitchen. You need to move into commercial premises and make sure you continue to supply as well.
Yeah, exactly right. Yeah. I mean, trading with the majors, you need to be a little bit careful what you wish for, because it's hard work. You've got to be on the game. You've got to have your supply chain in check. You've got to be innovative. You've got to be good at developing relationships. And, you know, most importantly, as I said, you really need to work out how you're going to have a profitable business. Yeah.
Yeah, you don't want to run a business at a loss indefinitely.
No, definitely not.
Talk to me about how you do that. When you take your clients, you've got some amazing brand, you know, well-known brand names in Australia. Talk to me about how, you know, you've done that using, I guess, client success stories and personal brand in the marketplace to kind of position yourself in that.
Yeah, look, I think, you know, in terms of I'm reasonably well-known after quite a long time in the industry, both when I was corporate and doing what I'm doing now, and then subsequently do have, you know, quite a few success stories with brands that are well known and become very good at telling the story of, without, you know, being arrogant about it. But, you know, we were involved in this journey and this is how we put it together. And, you know, it's a lot of commercially successful stories over the last few years. And so we're not outrageously sophisticated in how we do that. We do our own. I'm on LinkedIn weekly telling the stories, very well connected on LinkedIn. I do my own Davey J. Burns Instagram, again, telling the stories of products and brands we've developed and where they're ranged and how we went about it, you know, providing helpful insights and tips and tricks along the journey as well, both still content, video content. We do, you know, MailChimp inconsistently. I must say that we do email marketing as well. We have our own podcast as well, The Food Mentor, where, you know, we chat to guests just like you and I are chatting now. And at the same time, providing tips and tricks on what to do and most importantly, what not to do. And we do our own podcast as well with a few of us chatting about a certain topic, whether it be branding or product development, or again, through the guise of tips and tricks. And I mean, obviously, we can only really work with a certain amount of brands at any one given moment in time. And the brands we are working with, we have been working with for years. We don't have this like sort of bursting urgency to sort of get a swag of new clients, but, you know, obviously brands do come and go, so a pipeline of potential new clients to work with is absolutely important. But we, you know, we sort of do okay. Could do all of this world of marketing a lot better, but yeah, we're pretty content with how things are going.
I think just about everyone can get those little minor 1% improvements across the board. But I do like that we're using the podcast, particularly, and we do the same here with this show, right? You know, we use the podcast as a content creation tool to explore stories with customers and partners to then share and create content to put across multiple channels. Now, whether that be across your email marketing with MailChimp or High Level or HubSpot or whatever system that you might be using in your business, right? As well as putting it on Instagram and LinkedIn, where your customers are likely to be, is a really kind of leverageable strategy to use. And I think we get this, you know, we think it needs to be harder than it really does. You know, God, I've got to create all this content, you know, every 2 seconds of every single day. But just doing something consistently, even if it's only once a week, is actually more important than not doing anything at all or doing it inconsistently.
Yeah.
And I think there's a thing, you know, certainly from a personal brand perspective, one of the things about consistency of content, so consistency of your podcast, consistency of posting on Instagram or whatever it happens to be, isn't necessarily just about the message that you share and the creativity of that message and the craft of that message. But it's also the consistency, because if you're consistent with your content, it's almost subconsciously saying to your customer that you are consistent in other parts of your business as well.
Yeah, that's right. I've had people say to me, they've chatted to me, they've felt like they've actually met me, but they haven't, you know, through the video content, you know, watching you sort of jabber on with the earphones on video and, you know, some of the content that we do. So yeah, it's, and look, I've most probably, you know, in creating that content, it's great marketing content, but it's actually, in some ways, it's almost secondary. We just love talking to people, love publishing helpful information anyway, because I'm extremely right-brained. So I love doing all that stuff. And if it ends up being great marketing content at the same time, then happy days.
That's right. For anyone hesitant to do so, as an ex-colleague of mine through my first BNI group used to say, I've only got one head, I may as well use it.
Yeah, that's right. And amazingly, actually, you know, stats-wise, apparently on LinkedIn anyway, is only 1% of users ever post anything.
Yeah, it's pretty small. It's pretty small, so it's pretty easy to stand out.
Yeah.
Let's pivot, David. I want to throw you at some quick fire questions, because I think, I mean, the wealth of information you've just shared is really cool. You know, have consistent content, share stories about what you're doing, you know, and put it out through social media on a consistent basis. As you say, you know, it builds that relationship with prospects who feel like they know you. And if you don't do that with some consistency, you won't get that opportunity to kind of create that relationship and then intimacy with that customer to bring them on.
Yeah, that's right.
If you were to have coffee with any historical figure, who would you choose?
Oh, look, I was thinking about, I would have to say, after watching the documentary on Netflix, that I'd have to say David Beckham. You know, I've got a lot of respect for him after his career, you know, his highs and his lows, and a real down-to-earth character. I play soccer too. My boys play soccer. My 11-year-old actually looks a tiny bit like David Beckham when he was 11. That's my pick, David Beckham. Not so historic, but a little bit historic.
Yeah, I think there's some fascinating stories there. Absolutely. I actually enjoyed that documentary as well. It's really, really, really insightful.
Yeah.
What's an insult that you've received that you're really proud of?
Oh, that's a tough one. I'd have to say, I mean, I don't get many, but corporately, a long time ago, not so much today, just for the record. I used to have people tell me I was cocky, you know, cocky Englishman. And I was saying, you know, there's always this fine line between having an air of confidence in what you do and how you go about your life and cockiness. You know, apparently there was a period, you know, in my early 30s where I have overstepped the mark. Again, not sure if it's an insult, and I'm not really sure if I'm proud of it, but that's probably the only one I can think of right now.
No, that's a good one. I reckon I've been called that more than a few occasions. What's one thing about DJB Foods and cream that has come as a surprise for you as it's become successful?
Yeah, I think, you know, reputationally, my reputation, I never realised it was actually happening that we're developing this really solid reputation, particularly in Australia, for, you know, the go-to person to develop cool stuff and get it distributed, you know, around the country here in Australia. And it's just happened by osmosis that we are pretty well known with a pretty good reputation. The Wildland today, I guess, isn't necessarily a surprise. I think it it surprised me a few years back when I started to realize that, you know, you're pretty well known as an individual and as a personal brand, as a business brand, and largely driven by what we were talking about before, about great stories and, you know, great insights and knowledge gleaned from literally a lifetime in this industry. Yeah.
What's a tool that you use on a day-to-day basis that you find indispensable?
A tool that I use, not a tool necessarily, but, you know, this sadly does live in my hand. I do a lot of my work on my iPhone, and I guess email, text, WhatsApp communication on a couple of times an hour basis is just become an amazing way to chat to people casually. Yep. Or even formally these days through those basic sort of communication modes. It has to be that for sure.
Yeah. I think it's one of those, you're absolutely right. You know, if we don't communicate with people, we can't expect them to communicate with us. Right?
Yeah, I mean,
we need to lead the relationship.
Yeah, totally. And, you know, as saying, you know, if there's a problem with anything, generally it can be fixed by improving the communication. Like communication fixes anything. So, you know, while that's been a very powerful technological advancement over the last couple of decades, with my young boys, it's become very problematic as well, you know, just living on the screens. And it's fine. I'd love to get them out and active and playing soccer, because it's a period of time where they're not on their screens.
Yeah, it's very, very hard to run around and kick a football, isn't that? You've got your phone in it.
Very hard, but not impossible.
I'm sure they've tried. Last question, David. What do you think marketing in the food sector will look like in 5 years' time? Do you think it'll be much change, or will it be?
I do, man. I do. I mean, there's no secret. There's, you know, AI and artificial intelligence and what that has already done, and the trajectory that is on to make marketing, automated marketing, creating images, replicating photography and video content. It's quite scary. I'm not fully up to speed on the micro detail of what can be done, but I've had a glimpse.
I think by the time you're up to date with it, it's out of date.
Yeah, well, that's right. So, I mean, I do need to come up to speed on that world. So I think it's going to be a lot easier and cheaper and faster to create amazing content. Consumers be able to tell the difference between lots of hard work developing content versus AI-generated content. Probably not. So I think that's the future, mate. So I'm definitely don't know anywhere near enough about it, but I know there's a tsunami of technological advancement coming with AI, I think, sure.
Yeah, I would absolutely agree with that as well. Like, we're already using AI in our business. We're using it with clients as well. And, you know, you're right. It's creating a sort of the speed of creation and the speed of ideation for a lot of stuff is a lot better. You can certainly at this stage still see, you know, ChatGPT generated content compared to kind of tutorial content, but it gives you that foundation.
Yeah.
And if you're looking for something in your business that, you know, can give you some leverage in what it is you're doing, you know, using AI to either sort of create a foundation of image content or written content can give you a base to build upon. And it also effectively means that you're reducing the cost of creation.
Yeah. Right?
More cost aggression means more profit, means you can go to market more aggressively.
Yeah, definitely. There's another answer to that question too, which is around, which is not AI related at all, and it's the word purpose. It's a brand purpose. So sustainability, giving back, reducing plastic, avoiding use of palm oil, you know, using recycled, upcycled foods and vegetables, anything to do with kindness and doing the right thing by the planet has become quite a significant part of growing up. Food and beverage and FMCG brand. So look at, you know, the toilet roll brand, Give a Crap, and Thank You, Walter, and their range now. And the Nothing Dips that you mentioned earlier on, it's the only dip range in a paper tub, and it's have to have been the fastest growth brand I've been involved with. They're beautiful dips, but it has all been about the paper tub, not a plastic tub. So yeah, AI and purpose, mate, they're the big ones.
Yeah, I was saying this on a podcast the other day. It reminds me of my year 11 business assignment in product development, which I failed, actually. My then business teacher decided that it was an unrealistic concept, and it was to replace extruded polystyrene produce trays with wax-covered recycled paper produce trays, which are everywhere now. But in the early 90s, they didn't exist.
Yeah. Yes.
I could have retired 15 times over by now, but unfortunately not.
Yeah, look, I think it's from a sustainability point of view, the most understood area is definitely, by consumers, is definitely plastic reduction. And, you know, you still see three cookies in a massive plastic dome container. Yeah, it's a big one for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. David, really appreciate you joining us today. Guys, if you're interested in learning more about David and David's work, you can find David over at djbfoodgroup.com. And there's a link there to David's calendar, which I know you're more than willing to sort of jump on for a 30-minute strategy session. You can find some details there about creamdesign.com.au, and you can also catch David at davidjburns.com.au. We'll put all those links in the show notes. David, really appreciate you joining us and sharing with us your journey, mate.
Fabulous. Great to chat. Thanks so much.
And guys, if you've enjoyed today's episode, please like, share, comment, all those sort of cool things that we know you do. And we'll catch you on an episode real soon.
Thank you for joining us on today's episode of More Clients, Less Effort. Join us next time for another insightful discussion filled with actionable advice and inspiring stories, all geared towards helping you grow and scale your business simply and easily. Remember to subscribe to the podcast on your favorite app so you never miss an episode. See you next time.